You're listening to the Marginally Geeky Show, the Epically Geeky Book Club.
Greetings and welcome to the Marginally Geeky Show. I'm your host for the evening, Dr. Evil, I guess. I've got a cat in my lap. It's a thing. I'm your host for the evening, Eugene Stevens. Tonight I'm joined by Joseph and Sean. How are y'all doing?
Not bad.
Peachy.
Good. Okay, good deal. Tonight's book, we are discussing Wool. Reach over here real quick for my stuff. Here we go. How do you say this guy's name? Is it
Hugh Howey?
Hugh Howey, I think is how it's spelled.
Yeah.
Hugh Howey. Anyway, it's by Hugh Howey. It is the it's the first book in a trilogy that Apple Plus has based their series Silo on. So if you've watched Silo, we're talking about the first book in that series. So this was your pick, Joseph. So why did you pick this book?
Well, I didn't finish the series, but I liked the what I saw, the first 5-6 episodes, whatever it was. I liked the way the series was built. I felt like there was a lot of room for a lot of lore and world building in this. And when it was my time to come up with a book, I figured, like, this is something I'm interested in. And we all kind of have similar interests in, like, we have like post-apocalyptic dystopian kind of stuff going that we all like in one way or another. Is like, there's a lot to learn about it, and it's a trilogy, which makes me feel better because that means I can get a lot more of it instead of just a one-off, you know. And a trilogy is much easier to sink your teeth into than say something that Tolkien wrote and I have to read 17 books to get all the way through it, you know. So that was the reasoning behind it. I found the main character in the series, in the show, Juliet, pretty interesting in the way she like thought and handled problems. And I wanted to see how that character developed beyond the show.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Well, let's go ahead and just talk a little bit. Do you want to go ahead and give a brief explanation of what the story is on the book?
Sure. I mean, the book itself is basically humanity, at least from our perspective when you start the book, is all living in this one silo because of this disaster that has happened that they don't really talk about, but essentially the surface of the earth is uninhabitable. And the book revolves around a few characters. It kind of like switches main characters depending on which part of the book you're in. And it kind of shows their journeys as they live their lives in the silo. And then inevitably when you have humanity living in one confined space, there's going to be cracks both metaphorically and like in the physical world. And it's just people trying to figure out why they're there, what is going on. Why did my light get darker? Oh, there we go. and so it's that type of journey, you know? So, the main character, Juliet, is a, you know, mechanically savvy, kind of almost a, she can solve the problems by like, if she can dig in and take it apart and figure it out, like that's the kind of character they try to portray her. And I really like that. It wasn't just a, like a standard, how do I say this? Let's put it in anime terms. She's not like the OP character where she just knows all and can figure everything out and stands far and above from everyone else. She is just a mechanic, for lack of a better term. And I think that makes the story a little bit easier to believe because it's one of those things where kind of like The Martian, where it's like you do the math and you figure it out. And so from that kind of perspective, like it's easier to swallow.
Absolutely. Yeah. So in this book, so everyone does live in this silo, and it literally starts off with a character who's the sheriff at the time is like, I'm leaving. I'm getting out. And everyone's like, no, don't do this. Don't do this. You know, and he's like, nope, it's my time. And so he walks out and he thinks, oh no, this has all been a lie. Like everything is fine or whatever. And then he's not, and he's dead. And then the thing is they send people out for cleaning. So they've got these screens that are you know, in different places that show what the outside world looks like. And as time builds up, you know, they get dusty and dirty and they need someone to clean it. And the way that they work in the society is when you become, when you've done something that's against the rules and you get exiled, then you go clean. And during that point, you die. And it's very stratified. So you have farming levels that are kind of in the mid part. You have IT, which handles very limited technology. It is, I do like the technology, the way it's presented in the book. And then if you watch the TV show, I like how it looks there as well. It's very 1950s futuristic, if you know what I'm talking about. So, you know, we've got these large TVs, but there's computer information on it, that type of thing. And then you have like the mechanics are at the very bottom because they're the ones that are dealing with the machines that keep the silo going. And it's been a long time. Stuff's breaking down. There's lots of problems. And they keep referring to the uprising. And during the uprising, supposedly all information that they previously had about how the silo was built, why they're there, all that stuff was erased. And it's a crime to literally talk about it. It's a crime to talk about that. It's a crime to even mention that you're even thinking about what's the outside world like. It is very, this book series is not that old, right? But it smacks of that type sci-fi. So, but yeah, we have several, you're right. We have several other characters, Sheriff Holston, John's the mayor, and those are kind of our three main characters. And then when the other two die, we literally follow Juliet pretty much for the majority of it. We do have Lucas. We do get information from Lucas, kind of his side, as things go on. And we get a little bit on kind of what's going on with Bernard from IT. But for the most part, it ends up being Juliet's story. So, you kind of already explained why you picked the book. So, what's your favorite part of the book, Joseph?
So, you know, it's funny. Like, there are a couple different instances within the book that I really liked. It was the when they figured out that the visor that the people were using when they go out wasn't actually seeing the outside world. It was all an illusion, and that's why Holston and his wife thought they were seeing something and then ended up dying anyway. Mm-hmm. I liked that part. I liked the subtle hints kind of in the first quarter of the book to let you know that something was off with the suits when they were talking about the subpar tape and stuff like that. I was like, that is going to, I remember the first time I was reading this, I was like, this is going to come out like way at the end, like why this is a thing. But honestly, I think what I identified that I like the most about this series, and it did not hit me until right now when you were talking about it, Eugene, and when you mentioned the uprising. So as you get in the first part of the book, they're definitely talking about the uprising. And then as you get to the end, they make a comment about how that wasn't the first kind of uprising. And I had a kind of, is there a parallel to the Matrix here? Like,
oh yeah.
About all of these people that are against, you know, the rules or whatever, and then they kind of restart their society and they keep moving that way. And in my mind, I was like, holy crap, the silo is Zion, you know? And you have the IT department acting as the machines. And and that's essentially how, like, I think now that is probably what drew me to the book the most. Like, it wasn't sitting in the front of my brain. It was kind of sitting in the back. Like, I feel like I've seen something like this before. It's the Matrix. It's the Matrix without AI and bots and all that kind of stuff.
You're very much right. Like, it is very much because the attitude of IT is very much, we've seen this before. This has happened before. It's not a big deal. We're just going to get through it. It's a pain in the butt when it happens, but things always go back to the way they are. And everything's fine. And that's kind of how the Matrix was. It was like, you know, you're not the first one. You're not, you think you're special. You're not. We've done this here. We've been through this. We've done this dance. And just, it's everything's going to reset and everything will go back. You know, we'll lose a little ground, but whatever. You know, life keeps moving on. And then, you know, we have an actual special person that actually is changing things. Mm-hmm. So, my favorite part of the book was, really? My favorite part of the book was when she, you know, whenever she is walking out. So, you know, like I said, spoilers if you haven't read the book. She gets fingered and basically is like, no, you've done the thing. Like you're not following the rules and you're causing a bunch of problems. So you're out. And so when they put her in the suit, because she's from Mechanical has figured out that IT is like the stuff they order is crap. Like, so we're going to actually use the good stuff. And so when she walks out, her suit doesn't disintegrate. And that's one of the things that she immediately figures out is, oh my God, they've been building these suits so that they are supposed to disintegrate. These suits are supposed to not allow anyone to go too far out, because the view that they see is basically they're kind of in a crater. And so everyone that dies can only go out so far before they do so. So they're like a permanent reminder of, you know, this is what you're looking at. You break the rules, you know, your dead body is going to be sitting on screen forever, essentially. And so when she walks out, number one, she doesn't decide she's not going to clean. And that's apparently a thing. Like everyone eventually kind of comes around to the idea that they're going to clean. And I think that's because in their visors, they're shown, oh no, everything is nice and everything is not, you know, a wasteland. And so I guess it incentivizes everyone to think, oh, well then I'll go clean the sensors so everyone can actually see what the real world is. And then she doesn't clean and she walks over, you know, she's able to keep walking and gets away from the silo. And, you know, of course that causes, I guess you'd call him the main antagonist of the book, Bernard, because he is an asshole. That causes him to freak out or whatever. And then she finds, lo and behold, there are more silos. In fact, this is silo 18 of 50. What, like 50 or something like that, I think is what they said.
Yeah.
Apparently they have lost touch with a few silos, because we find out a little bit later on in the book there are certain people who are tasked with keeping things going, and it turns out to be Bernard from IT. And he has communication with other silos, and they have a little bit of communication in between them. Like, hey, you know, we just sent someone else out, or, you know, hey, there's a new guy coming in, stuff like that. But yeah, that was kind of my favorite part is when we get to the turn and we start figuring out, oh yeah, it wasn't like you said, because of the movies like The Matrix and stories, you know, dystopian stories like this, where obviously things are being kept from, you know, the masses. It wasn't like a super big secret or anything, but it was interesting to see, okay, there is other things going on in this world. So, Sean, what was your favorite part?
I think I had a couple. The when Marnes and Johns are traveling up and down the silo, it alluded to the size of the silo a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And like, as they're traveling level to level, I liked how it was written, and it made me want to like find out, oh, what's going on in this level? Like, how are people living in this level? And then how are people living in this level and stuff like that? Cause that to me seemed really, really interesting. Like, not, it wasn't the destination, it was the journey.
Mm-hmm.
Which I really enjoyed that. The other part I liked is later on when Bernard is teaching Lucas, or like going through all the books and all that, and they show them, we have a contingency written down for every possible scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Just need you to read it. And which, like, the silos are huge, and you at that point you've already gotten an inkling of what's going on and how IT's running the show and all that. But until that point, you don't realize how much work went into the social manufacturing of the whole series. And like, they only, it's just a brief chat about it. There's like allusions to it and all that, and it's only a brief thing, but it scratches at the surface of how much work actually went in to the social engineering. So, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Go ahead. I was going to say it's very much, not only a dystopian future, but it's also very much of the social engineering type, you know, The scary part for this is not the fact that the world is irradiated. The scary part is the fact that people have lived in this silo for so long and are so accustomed to the rules and policies that the world literally does not exist beyond the walls of this silo. And everyone just kind of accepts it and moves on. And when you don't, then it becomes an uprising. And like you said, Sean, it's like, oh, no, we have plans for it. Like, they're going to do this, and this is going to happen, and we're going to fall back. But we've already got people set up, and it'll be fine. Don't worry about it. It's good. And it's just like, oh, okay. So, yeah, that's the it's funny because, you know, there was a time period, especially reading like things like 1984, like we've done on this show, where that type of mindset is the scary part of the sci-fi. And then we've moved, you know, we moved on, and you know how things change. Other things become more in vogue, and the sci-fi changes or horror changes. And we kind of moved on to things like, well, no, the scary part is, you know, what the world was going to become and everything else. And I feel like, at least with several of the books that we've read, at least some of the series, we're kind of getting back into that mindset of, no, the scary part is how little control you could actually have and not even realize it, to be honest with you. So,
I was just going to say the part that Sean was talking about where Barnes and Lucas were talking, it made me wonder if they have something for every possible scenario. The only way they could have that is communication with other silos. Like, there's no way that someone could sit down and come up with them. But they had to have come up with, I would say, a significant chunk of them for their own silo. And mm-hmm. They talk about the last uprising where it was like a generation ago, and that definitely was not the first. So the first thing I thought of was, well, how long have they been down there?
Yeah.
How many, like, based on the technology and like what you kind of alluded to earlier, Eugene, is like the technology is very 1950s. You know, this is Cold War era. Someone set off the bomb, you know, and they've been in the silos for a couple hundred years longer. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, no, it's metal to deteriorate.
Yeah. No joke.
They do go into it. Like all that social engineering, everything that came up in the manuals and all that, that was done before the war, like the cataclysm, because they caused it. They said it that, yeah, we're the ones that did it. This is how come we could prepare for it. So all that stuff, you figure like all the technology was high end. Okay. First thing we got to do is knock technology back, but here's all your books and all that. Everything's already been planned, thought of at that point. Who knows? You could have had AI figure it all out first. And then here's everything in paper. There you go. We're going to lock you up kind of thing. Yep. So yeah, they were well prepared because they caused it.
They talk about that, how
without getting out of the shelters.
Yeah. And they talk about the fact that, you know, why don't we just, you know, they don't say email, but they're like, why don't we just email people? And it's just like, because it's expensive. And they're like, you know, you start asking questions. Well, why would it be expensive? It's just electrons. And it's like, don't go down that path. That's a bad path. Yeah. That's going to get you evacuated. And it's like, well, why don't we have elevators? Well, don't go down that path. You know, it's very much don't ask questions, do your duty, and just move on. So what was your least favorite?
I did not like that. If the ending felt a little rushed, to be honest, like she comes back from spoiler alert, from silo 17 and she's like in, medical care for what did they say? A couple of weeks or whatever, because of the fires. Yeah. And also she wakes up and she's mayor and there have been these changes. There's communication with other silos. And there's a lot of stuff that happened when she was out that we were not privy to as readers. And then in the epilogue, it was that communication with Solo, Jeremy, something like that.
Yeah.
So you just call him Solo.
talking to those kids. And then he says, Juliet will like that we've gotten the water coming down. I was like, when did they reestablish communication, you know? So there's just some stuff that I felt like at this point it's 80 chapters, so I understand why he is cutting it off, but I was like, I would have just liked a little bit more there.
Fair enough. Sean, anything you didn't like in particular?
I think my biggest thing, it wasn't so much with the book as, so I watched the Silo series first.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so the whole time I'm comparing it to the book. And like right off the bat in the first chapter is the big reveal in the series at the end of the television series.
Oh, really?
So I'm like, in the first chapter, I'm like, what the fuck? So I'm like,
what do you mean, Sean? What reveal in the series?
Well, the big reveal in the series is that what you see in your headset when you go out to clean isn't real.
Isn't
That's real. The big reveal at the end of the television series. Oh. And then it's basically her overlooking the seeing the other silos, and that's how the series season one ends.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't get anywhere. So
interesting.
I honestly think the way they built stuff up, the television series, and I don't say this very often, but I think the television series had it better than the book. So the whole time I'm like comparing stuff, and that, so it's no fault of the book, because if I'd done it in the other order, it probably would have been better. But that, and also I didn't like the character that they cast for Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's the one that I had in my mind through the whole book too. So I always had like, it's Juliet again kind of thing. So it's no real fault of the book, but like, I didn't care for Juliet, and some things just, the book felt out of order, and that it was just stupid because the book came first, but
yeah,
it was just because of the order I read it and watched it in.
Before the show, we were talking, this is the first book in a three-part trilogy. Apparently, the second book is a prequel book. So, and like I was telling the guys beforehand, I finished the book and started doing like you had done. I was like, oh, I'll watch the Silo series. And I didn't even get through the first episode because all of the things that are happening in the first episode, I'm like, this is all stuff they kind of hint about in the book that happened before the book. And oh, so yeah, I was like, I'm gonna get confused here. I'm gonna go into the show and be like, oh, remember when this happened? And they'll be like, that didn't happen in the book. So well, I stopped watching it.
You obviously haven't read the other two, Joseph. Like, no, you said, one of them is a prequel.
Yeah, the second one is apparently a prequel.
Well, maybe because the series like deals with a lot of stuff that happened, like that case that they kept saying Juliet helped with.
Right.
Well, you get all that in the television series. So I was confused as all get out too, because I'm like, man, this is like a main story in the TV series, and you've got two sentences in the book about it. I'm like,
yeah.
I know it happens, but now I'm kind of wondering, oh, did they just grab a whole bunch of stuff from the prequel? Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff on Juliet and her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And
it sounds like that might be the case.
Yeah. Now that, because I didn't realize the second book was a prequel. So, but. Yeah, you get all that. You find out what's going on. Anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The thing I didn't like, and this is just, maybe it's because of my work. Why did IT have to be the bad guys? Like, I understand in this story why it makes sense, but I guess I just don't.
I kept thinking of Roy and Moss.
Oh my God.
There's no way that Silo would be like still, like, there'd be a fire and Moss would be like trying to remember the 49 digit code to call somebody.
Exactly. Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Isn't it in the series? It's not IT, it's the judiciary or whatever.
Yeah, I think in the TV series it's the judiciary, because she kept mentioning, at least on the show.
There is IT and judiciary, okay. But judiciary, you find out, are puppets of IT.
Okay. Yeah, in the book it was IT. IT is the mastermind behind everything, pretty much. I don't know. I like sci-fi where technology is used and generally tends to be like a saving thing. It's like, no, we have the tech, we've built these tools that we can use to save ourselves. And it's just disheartening when it's like, oh no, we're gonna limit the tech and the people who are in charge of it are the bad guys. And I'm just like, well, crap. But that's one of my little Piccadilly. So, what do you think of the writing?
I liked it. I feel like the pace was pretty good. I appreciated, especially in the later chapters, where it would say, you know, we're in silo 17 now, and this is happening. Mm-hmm. And then we're back in silo 18, and this is happening. So that made it easier to keep track of what was going on.
Sean, thoughts on the writing?
I agree with you. The pace, it did keep a constant pace. I think when he tried speeding things up, like when they were having like the revolt near the end, and mm-hmm. I think he tried speeding it up, but it just didn't freaking work. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh man, your clutch is busted. You're stuck in one gear. And it didn't really hit until like, oh man, this should be really a lot faster, but he kept throwing in stuff with Lucas and Bernard and stuff like that, which would slow it right down. It gave you great information, but it was like, man, this, you know, there's a lot of things going on, but you're not good about writing. You're not good at writing for large groups and large actions going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was abundantly clear when the revolt actually happened.
Mm-hmm. That's the only time I got kind of confused. And I thought, well, maybe it's just me because I'm doing something as I'm listening to the book. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention. But, yeah, during the revolt, I got confused about now who died, who killed who. So,
yeah, it almost seemed like there were throwaway characters
mm-hmm.
and then tried making a big deal of them later on. And you can't, it doesn't work. You got it backwards. You can't do that. It's the story itself. The kernel of it is very simple, and he was smart using that. It's the story isn't a very complicated story when you get down to the nuts and bolts of it. So it was well written that way. And once again, I apologize for doing this, but I like keep comparing it to the TV series. But the TV series, the pace was much better. They were good at like giving you like, okay, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? Where I didn't get that in the book so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't know, it's because I watched a TV series, but there wasn't anything in that book that you really, if you like thought about, you couldn't have figured it out. Like you knew who the villains were. There weren't any surprises who the villains were. That was established right there. You knew who the good guys were. There was no surprises there.
Mm-hmm.
You knew what the scenario was. Nothing is really complicated. So I would, is this book like young adult? I never did look this up.
You know, I don't know.
I think this book to me would belong in like a young adult. I can see doing like book reports like in high school or something like that for this one. I wouldn't, nothing any further than that. And I guess why they changed it so much for the TV series. I had a good kernel, but there wasn't any cliffhangers or anything that would be like, oh, I didn't see that coming. Especially when he gives that shit away in the first chapter. But like even the screens, like did you guys figure that out with like the pixels and the screens way before they said it, right?
Well, yeah, when he started saying, he's like, oh yeah, he said, you know, it's insane the amount of pixels that's in here. It would be like looking at real life, but who would make a screen that's only this size? That's like the size of like glasses or whatever. And I'm just like,
if you couldn't figure that out, they give that away the first chapter. Like he's basically using the rest of the book to explain that first chapter when you think about it. And that kind of like, okay. I've read a lot of science fiction and fiction and stuff like that. And there's no mystery in this one. So, I think this is kind of a young adult kind of thing for me anyway.
I'll have to look it up. Like I said, the only time I got confused was, like I said, I was doing other stuff. I honestly didn't even blame it on the book. I blamed it on myself. I was like, well, I probably just wasn't paying close enough attention. But then, like, I kept listening. I was just like, okay, well, that's what happened. It was never like a long mystery to me of, you know, what happened. I might have to go back and re-listen to it or whatever. So I did appreciate that it was very, you know, straightforward. I was able to listen to it for the most part and do other stuff. Cause that's how I roll with listening to stuff. But I'm like you, Joseph. I did very much appreciate the fact that it very was clearly, right, we're in this silo. Now we're in this silo, or here's where we're at, or here's where I appreciate that in books where it's very clear where you're at. Because sometimes you're sitting there and you're just like, whoa, we jumped halfway across the planet. What happened? Like, why are we over here now? But yeah, I thought the writing was fine. So here's a good question. Would you want to read another book by this author?
I'm going to read books 2 and 3.
Okay.
No. Especially now that the second book is a prequel.
Yeah. Sean, what about you?
I'm curious about the other series. I would not, personally, I wouldn't continue this series. And it's not all the writer's fault. I seriously think it's because I watched Silo the first season and it skewed everything, which fine, it happens. I am curious about that other series. Now in the Audible book, he does a little spiel at the end, I think, talking like he had that question and answer.
Yeah,
it turns out he wrote all the questions himself, dumbass. Yeah. But he talks about the other series being like a lot darker.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to just see what he thinks is darker, like what his version is. So I would read one of those ones, the first one from that, just to see what it's like too. But I'd also have to be in the right mindset. Dystopian futures, yeah, one a year, maybe. Depends on what's going on in life. So
yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. I'm torn. I'm kind of interested to read the second book, but I'm almost afraid if I'm going to go down that route, then maybe I don't watch Silo yet. Like I'm halfway thinking if I'm going to decide to read the second book, I need to read it before I watch the show.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
100%. It's not like, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's probably the route I will take. If I decide to read the second book, I will probably do that. I will say though, I'm not like dying necessarily to read the second book, to be quite honest with you. I've had some other stuff come up on my suggested list and I'm just like, oh, I'm gonna tear through that. It also doesn't help that I greatly enjoyed watching, I never watched the first one in the theater or anything. But sitting down to watch Dune and Dune 2, I kind of think I may start that book series. So
I thought about doing that too. I think I started it when I was
highly recommend.
A teenager. And I only got like a few chapters in. I'm like, oh my God, this is like reading the freaking Bible.
You're not wrong. That first book is, you're slogging through it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was like a young teenager at that point. So I'm like, it looks nice on the bookshelf, but I don't know if I'm going to crack it again.
So, yeah, we'll see. May give that one a shot. We'll see. Like I said, I've enjoyed the two movies enough that I may at least read the first one just so that I can say I've read it. Now, whether or not I go on to the other ones, I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, we may get there.
Fine with the first three, unless you want to get like weird.
That's what I've heard. Did reading the book impact your mood at all?
My mood?
Mm-hmm.
I read it mostly at work because it used to be when I would read my books, it would be on my commute because I would commute for an hour and 15 minutes both ways. So yeah. I had plenty of time to do that. But I read it mostly at work. And so for the most part, it was a nice distraction, especially when I was doing very predictable things. Mm-hmm. It occupied that right spot in my brain that I could concentrate on what I was doing and listen to the book at the same time.
Fair enough.
That's how I'll answer that.
Sean, did it impact you at all?
Annoyance. And once again, it wasn't the book. It was like I was constantly comparing it to the series. So it was like I'm missing stuff or, wow, what they like cut out a whole bunch here or, oh boy, they added a bunch of stuff. Oh man, I thought the series ended like as soon as she stepped out. And then you had all this extra stuff. I'm like, oh, okay, finally, I got some new stuff. But yeah, it was a comparison between the two, and it threw me.
Fair enough.
The fact that it went an extra 40 chapters from where the series finished, it was a little crazy.
Yeah, but that being said, the series had like 40 chapters worth of stuff that wasn't in the book. Like, because you got the whole story behind Juliet and the murder she helped solve. Yeah, there was a lot more stuff in the TV series. It wasn't in the book. So they just, unless they pulled it from book two, they might have.
Well, not knowing that book two is a prequel, it makes me feel like the series did what The Witcher did and had a whole bunch of like stuff happening in a different time frame. And they kind of like convened at the end.
Well, yeah, like there's a good chunk of what happened to Juliet's mother. And like there's a lot more stuff. Her dad plays a much more prominent role. And the birth control thing. Or the sheriff at the beginning.
Yeah, because that's literally where we start off. Like all I've seen, the only characters I've really seen at this part this point are mainly the sheriff and his wife.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and there's the whole explanation behind that too. Like,
and what's funny is literally the first scene is the scene from the book. It's the sheriff walking in, and that morning he goes into the cell, locks the cell, throws out the keys, and you know, what's his face? His deputy's like, "Sheriff, what are you doing? Please don't do this. Please, God, don't do this." And he's like, "Nope, I'm going out there to join her." And it's like, okay, so this is what I've read. And then literally it's just like a flashback that we stay in the entire time. And I'm just like, this shit wasn't in there. So, yeah, at that point, I think I was probably 30, 40 minutes in. I was just like, yeah, I'm going to just confuse the hell out of myself. So I'm going to stop watching at this point. So any lingering questions?
I want to know what's in Silo 1. Is Silo 1 the ringleader that is doing all of this and controlling all the other silos? And is it just, are the 50 just in the continental U.S.? Because they did say the name Atlanta in this thing, you know, or are there more silos throughout the world? Or does his other series, Sand, take place on the other side of the world where it's also, you know, completely destroyed and these people found a different way to survive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, yeah, I have the kind of same questions, like what led to this? You know, how many of the other ones have still survived? How are they doing? Like I said, it will probably be why I will, if I continue reading, it will be why I continue reading. Cause like I said, it's not like it was unenjoyable. I do hope it moves a little faster though. I hope it's a little bit like, okay, let's find out what happened to this silo. All right, move on to the next one. Move on to the next one. You know, I don't need an entire series on every single silo, but you know, we'll see. So, Sean, any questions in particular?
I was questioning. I'd like to know more about what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, more importantly, like, so they have all these contingencies and stuff like that, but I want to know what the end game was. Like, when do you see them going back outside? Like you decimated the earth. You must have had a plan. And yeah, you had all these silos and all that, but you can't keep a society in just a constant status, stasis. Like things are going to change. It's what happens. So like, yeah, knock stuff down as much as you want, all the social engineering you want, but it's what was the end game?
So, that's a good question. That's a good question.
Who
knows it? Maybe, It may have just been short-sightedness. That would kind of suck to just be like to find out they were like, oh no, we were pretty sure we could keep this going forever.
Don't do me like that. It's not my response to that.
Yeah. What do you think about the narrator?
I thought the narrator was fine. Didn't have any issue. I appreciate that he tried to do voices, mm-hmm. you know. I preferred that than from, I don't remember which book I read or listened to, rather, that they had a bunch of different actors come in and do all the different parts. Mm-hmm. And that was far more confusing for me than just listening to one person talk in a continuous manner, you know? Mm-hmm. The only part that I think that he really fell apart was when characters would start talking real fast to each other back and forth, like in the areas when we were trying to talk through the mic during the revolt. I felt like there he kind of got lost. Like I had to go back and like re-listen to that part a little bit just so I can feel, okay, this person is talking to this person. Because when he tried to do the voices, they were a little too similar.
Mm-hmm. Sean, thoughts on the narrator?
I think, yeah, he did an adequate job. There wasn't much variation on the voices, on the characters, which, yeah, you could get confused for those fast spots. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, like there wasn't any other time that it wasn't adequate. It wasn't good. Like I've heard a lot worse. Heard a lot better.
Yeah.
But
something we've talked about, Joseph, a lot of us, Ray and I in particular, are definitely on this boat. If nothing else, we tend to prefer males doing female voices than females doing male voices. But even then, it would be nice in book series if they could at least get just a male and a female reader. And then you have the male do all the male voices and a woman do all the female voices, just because they sound a little more natural that way. But other than that, I mean, I think his voices were fine. I'm like you, I got confused on a couple of the voices here and there, but then once they spoke a little bit, I was like, okay, now that's who we're talking. That's who's speaking. So, let's see. Would you recommend the book? Obviously you would, Joseph, because you recommended it to us. So what about you, Sean?
This is the old standby. It would depend on
the person
who I was talking to, probably younger group.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first thing I would ask actually is, have you seen Silo? Oh, you have? Don't read the book.
Yeah, from what you're putting down, I kind of would have to agree with that, at least at this point.
Enjoy one or the other, not both.
Right. Or at least finish one. At least finish the book series before you maybe start the TV show. So.
Yeah. Finish the entire series before that might work better.
Yeah. Do we know, are they doing a second season of the TV show or do we know?
I'm pretty sure they, wait.
Cause they've been axing a lot of different series.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it got the axe or not.
I'll take a quick peek.
See. All right. Joseph, did, any tropes, any themes or tropes, you know, that they explored that you particularly liked?
Not that I can like see off the top of my head. I like that they avoided the like kind of perfect protagonist.
Yes, I 100% agree with you on that.
Yeah,
that would probably be my best answer to that.
Yeah, there was a series I started. And when we talk about the other books that we've been reading, I'll kind of catch up on that. I started reading called the Silver Ship series, and it is definitely kind of a perfect protagonist in that. And I think that's the main reason why I'm like, maybe I'll come back to this, but I don't know if it's going to happen. There's also like 20 books in that series. So I'm like, I don't know about this. Like,
I rereading Expeditionary.
And honestly, at this point, I would prefer to do that, to be completely honest with you. So I wouldn't mind hanging out with Skippy again. The main character in this, I'm just like, okay, can you quit being like the perfect dude? Like, seriously. So, Sean, any tropes or anything in this that themes or anything that you enjoyed that they thought they explored well or glad they didn't explore?
No, I think they, like, just much like their technology, they kept the people simple as well. And it worked for the series. Like, he really didn't go too in depth for any character growth or anything like that in the book. They do it in the series, the television series, but he didn't really do it too much in the book. Nothing jumps out at me for this one. Season two of Silo is set to finish shooting this month.
Oh, okay. So
they're probably already done. So, yeah.
That'll be interesting. See, if I do end up going to read the series and then come back to it, that would be interesting if it literally was season one was book two or the primary part of book two, and then season two of the series is book one or however they're going to do it. So,
I'm thinking season two is going to be as soon as Juliet leaves the silo.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, well, season one ended. So,
that would be her
in the other silo. And I don't think in the television series you realize Lucas works in the IT department.
Okay. So they haven't even gotten that far yet.
No.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. So that sounds like that may be the case.
Right? That's how she meets him.
Like, you see him writing out the stars or drawing out the stars, which actually, that was, if I had to pick a third part that I really liked, I did. Mm-hmm. I really liked those bits in there too. But I don't think you know he works for IT at that in season one of this television series. So
it's funny that Bernard tells him at one point, he's like, yeah, don't bother writing down the stars. We pretty much know where they all are. They're not really moving. It's just like, okay, so obviously y'all have been doing this for a while. So if you could ask the author anything, what would it be? I think maybe he might
have any questions I should ask him.
I think maybe he may answer some of this stuff in later books. So part of me is just like, I mean, I probably had the same questions y'all do. Like, you know, we even talked about some of these already. How did things start? What were the original end goal for the, you know, for doing this? How many silos are there? How many of them are still active? You know, is there a purpose to each one or anything? You know, kind of the general stuff. Like I will say this, the book did set itself up very well for sequels, because it definitely did not wrap up anything, you know, a lot of things by any means. And I wonder if he had already had that planned out in his head whenever he wrote it. So,
yeah.
Anyway, any other questions y'all can think of right offhand?
Probably the process. Did you have a roadmap of like all three books, and then how did you decide to put what and what kind of thing? Especially if that second book is a prequel, why did you decide to do that? And, which I'm really thinking that he probably did have the roadmap, just because they allude to that. Oh, she helped out on a case that came up a few times.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Did you already have that case written, like that whole story written, and then decide to move it around?
Yeah.
So,
Joseph actually texted me today and was asking me about the names of a certain book series, Sean, that at least the first three books are very clearly laid out. He was asking me about the Babaverse books. I was going to tell you, I didn't get a chance. Joseph, book four, Heaven's River, he wrote after the other three books came out. It's good. I greatly enjoy it. And the more I read it, the more I enjoy it. But those first three books are clearly a story he completely thought out. They are so well done. The beats on them, just still one of my favorite series of all time.
Oh, no. Stop talking about it. I want to re-listen to it now.
I know, right? They're very, very good. Anyway. All right. Well, that is pretty much our discussion on Wool by Hugh Howey. Real quick, our next books, our book for April, and I know, granted, we're recording this at the end of March, and this won't come out until the 1st of April, but this is our March book. Our April book is Making It So by Patrick Stewart, and that was Jennifer's pick. I know I've already read it. You've already read it, right, Sean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
yeah, so for a lot of us, I think it's going to just either be a reread or, you know, we'll just be talking about it. And then May's book is... I think it's Ray's book, and it's Starter Villain by John Scalzi. That's one that's been advertised to me a lot by Audible. So when he picked it, I was just like, okay, guess we're doing this. So yeah. I also like Scalzi's writing. So I'm looking forward to it. So, but before we go into what else we've been reading, we have our first ever sponsor for this show, and it is Magic Mind. The people at Magic Mind reached out to us here. I've got a cat in my lap, so this is going to be interesting. You're going to help me read the, you're going to help me talk about this. So Magic Mind reached out to us and wanted to know if we wanted to try out one of their products, and Keycat, get out of the way. It is these little shot things. So if you're the type of person that in the mornings you have to have, you know, a cup of coffee, maybe a large soda, this could actually be a replacement for it. It is all natural stuff. The story behind it is essentially, pretty much exactly what it was. The founder actually went to the hospital because of, you know, just not taking care of himself. You know, way too much caffeine, way too much stress. That's a lot of things that a lot of us are going, you know, are going through. And this is a much more natural way of doing it. I will be very completely honest here. When I first got these little green bottles and I started reading the ingredients that are all natural, my first fear was, oh no, this is going to taste like grass in a blender. And I am very happy to report to you that is not the case. It actually has a decent taste to it. It's you know, there are things out there you take and you're like, all right, let me just, you know, hold my nose and take that. It tastes perfectly fine. I've only been on it for about 3 days, so I don't know if I've necessarily seen a lot of change or anything. I will say this, though. I took one right before I started the show. So if it seems like I was a little more focused, maybe, granted I've got a cat in my lap, but if it seems like I was a little more focused, maybe I didn't say as much, maybe that's proof positive that this thing worked. Who knows?
He just did it.
Even though I just said Anyway. But if you would, go check out, if this is something that you're looking for, you're like, look, I don't need all this caffeine, but I still need to get, you know, something to wake me up in the morning. I need something to help me focus and get me going for the day. Go check out Magic Mind at magicmind.com. All right. So let's talk about what else we've been reading. Sean, you want to go first?
So I think from the last show, I don't know if I had started Hope. That was the biography on Bob Hope.
Oh, okay, so, yeah.
Anyway, I finished it. Excellent. I learned a lot about Bob Hope. I really wanted to go out and, like, hit Amazon and, like, buy every one of his movies. And all. I love old movies like that. So it was like I had to, like, tamp that down. And it's on my wish list. I didn't actually hit it in my cart. So, but, no, it was – I learned a lot. He was a very, like, it was a difficult biography to make. There's been a whole bunch of biographies on Bob Hope, but it, like, all of his interviews and all that, like, you only saw the character. Like, he didn't answer questions very well, apparently. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I finished that, and then I started Fear the Sky. Now it's a trilogy by Stephen Moss. And the reason this one kept coming up in my suggested for Audible, and what I finally pulled the trigger on it, one, it came on sale, and two, it's read by R.C. Bray.
Oh, so okay.
It was like Skippy.
Yeah.
R.C. Bray reads The Expeditionary Force, and I love pretty well everything he narrates. So I'm like, fine, I'll do it. And I think I got about an hour left. The first book is about 18 hours on normal speed, so it's a good length, but No, I'm really enjoying it. I'm going to get the other two. It's probably one of the ones I'll recommend to you, Eugene. Okay. Basically, it's Earth has been targeted as like a new colonization planet. So before the main force comes, they send 8 agents and 4 like super destructive satellites and everything, but it's all clandestine. So it's like the agents are like they land in the ocean, deepest part of the ocean. They're humanoid form and they're meant to like blend in, go through the ranks of like militaries all over the world to make sure they don't use nuclear weapons. They don't want humans to wipe out the planet that they want. Mm-hmm. In that, they need all the humans to die too. So
okay,
these 4 satellites are AI driven and kind of keep tabs on everything, help the other agents. And anyway, one of the agents that the aliens send doesn't agree with genocide, so actually starts helping the humans. And it's the whole you can't look up in the sky because the satellites will know kind of thing, and you're being monitored. Anyway, there's a large group that you're like following, but it's really well written. RC Bray is so good in it. And yeah, I'm almost done the first book, and I'm like, oh man, I'm looking forward to the second one.
Cool. So,
yeah.
Awesome. Joseph, you reading anything else?
I haven't started anything else, but I did just finally purchase for myself The Fall of Numenor and Children of Hurin. So I'm going to start working on those. Eventually,
I got the physical copies of those books really? For Christmas, and I haven't. I started and I was like, oh man, this is another Bible, isn't it?
Yeah, the problem with reading Tolkien at work is because he is my favorite author, I tend to like really focus on and then I will completely ignore, you know, anything I'm supposed to be doing. So I will probably not start those until, you know, when I say go for walks in the evening or have a longer commute or something like that. But I definitely cannot do it at work because work will cease to exist.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
There we go. So the only thing I've honestly been kind of going back and re-listening to some older stuff. The only new thing I started listening to, and I've actually just been listening to it for the last day or so, is and it came out last year. It's Brute Force by Scott Meyer. It is read by Luke Daniels. You hear, you know, some of our traditional characters kind of coming through. But they're definitely not as bad as some of the other books. It's definitely not like going between the Magic 2.0 books and the Authorities books where, you know, it's very clear, oh, this is this character. There's a little bit of that, but not as much. It is definitely different for a Scott Meyer book because there's a lot of violence. In fact, it's funny. It starts off the book saying, if you do not like snakes, you are not going to like chapter 1. If you don't like violence, you're not going to like chapters 2 through 40. it is pretty violent, but it's fun violence. Like it's never super bad. It's not ever super deep. You're never like, this is really cringy. If you've read other Scott Meyer books, you kind of know what to expect. Just think the most violent stuff that's happened in those books, and it's that level of stuff or whatever. So I think the cat's about ready for me to be done anyway, because he's over here messing with stuff. But yeah, that's honestly the only other thing that I've been reading. Cause I've been going back and re-listening to a bunch of older stuff for whatever reason. Well, that is our show for the month, ladies and gentlemen. If you would please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, Google, YouTube, wherever it is you watch the show. You can find us at epicallygeeky.com, where you can find the other shows we do, including the Epically Geeky Show, the Creatively Geeky Show, and Sustainably Geeky. We've actually kind of gotten back on a schedule, and we've got episodes coming out almost every week now, so which is nice, because there was a time period there where we were getting bunched up and moving stuff around, but you know it happens. So you can find our social media at Epically Geeky on Facebook and Instagram. Where can we find you online, Joseph?
If you Google me, I'll show up somewhere.
John, where can we find you online?
Your favorite broken toy, spelt the Canadian way, on Instagram. And yeah, typically screwing with Wikipedia. Don't trust it, university students.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Did you see this one woman, this professor, in her prompt, like she wrote the prompt and it was two paragraphs. And like in between that, she took super small letters and made it white so that you couldn't see it. And it was something like it has like Abraham Lincoln riding a dinosaur in it or something like that. So if you just copied and pasted and put it into your old AI generation there, you're literally would you let go of me, cat? Your report would be like, oh yeah, the Roman Empire fell when Abraham Lincoln was riding a velociraptor or something, you know. I've got a buddy of mine that was like, it's very clear. Like he taught a college class. He's like, it's very clearly these kids, three of his kids, put in this stuff and didn't bother reading a damn thing afterwards. So yeah, don't trust it. As always, you can find my individual wacky adventure online at Optimus Gene on Facebook and Instagram. For everyone on the site, have a good night.
This has been a presentation of the Epically Geeky Network.